Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Hey, good morning, everyone. We are checking in right now with Shelton Mayor Mark Loretti. And Mayor Loretti, I know you heard our interview yesterday with Attorney Michelle Holmes representing the six officers who previously worked at the Shelton Police Department who were fired last year. First and foremost, were there any initial comments that you had in regards to some of the comments that she made for this lawsuit?
Yes, it's a good point because, you know, people say things because they're hired to do that. People say things to defend their position. And I get all that. But look, I work in a world of facts. You know, you had stated also yesterday that you couldn't understand why six officers were fired. So I want to run that down for you and for anybody that's listening. You know, two of the officers were terminated for lying. One officer lied 21 times and attempted to cover up, you know, a staged photo shoot, which I'll talk about in a minute. You know, the other employee lied, and he had a prior history of discipline. The third officer, who was on duty, left his assigned area without permission from the supervisor to take a photo shoot of his girlfriend undressing. Now, he was fired for sexual harassment because in the state of Connecticut, you know, unless you have someone's consent, you can't do that. And he was on duty and did that. So, look, that's the state law. If we're not interested in following the laws and upholding a standard, then okay. Now, on a totally separate incident, three officers were terminated because it involved a domestic violence situation, which ultimately turned into a sexual assault case, which I think you're probably aware now that there's a federal lawsuit that was filed by that victim. Now, when you don't do your job and a person gets raped and beat up, something's radically wrong. And then the supervisor attempts to cover it up in an internal investigation, and we have factual evidence that shows all this. You know, there's never been any discussion about the victim here. It's only about the people who got terminated. So I got to tell you something, Melissa. I am just not there with all this diatribe and this dialogue about how we're just picking on people as if we had nothing else to do. You know, and then they want to file a First Amendment lawsuit. Well, let me tell you something. They tried that trick back in 2018. Same people. First Amendment, First Amendments were violated. Guess what happened? Federal judge threw it out. Didn't even hear the case, just threw it out. So, you know, with that, you know, I live in a world that I have to build my foundations on facts, not emotions and not people's opinions. Or not Facebook.
Sure. So, Mayor Mark Loretti, just really quick, kind of going back really fast. In the interview, I had asked if the claims were true, if the things that they were saying, like that the chief, you, the city of Shelton, were attacking them or doing some kind of a distraction. I was saying, in the climate that we live in right now, where we can't find good officers, I was saying, why? What would be the reason for firing them? I just want to clarify that. I understand when you look at the cases against these six officers, it's very blatant why they were fired. I was saying, what would be a big enough reason to kind of distract or make up these cases? That's what I was kind of saying, just to kind of clarify. I did want to ask, though, there's been a lot of inquiries made by former officers and current officers to me personally that this porta potty situation that sort of sparked a lot of this, that was set up during the pandemic, was where this all kind of got started. Can you comment on the porta potty situation? A lot of people have said that was totally unfair to subject some officers to this situation when no other police departments were doing this.
Well, when you want to selectively pick and choose how you want to portray something, then yes, it would sound that way. It would sound that we were very ridiculously oriented towards whatever the case may be. But, you know, when there's a pandemic, the last thing you want is your public safety force to be contaminated. And, you know, back then, no one knew. No one in the world knew how to deal with this thing. So the best thing that what do people do across the world? They shut things down. So we attempted to close down the building and just limit the access. And we did that. We did that successfully. Now, when it comes to using the restroom facilities, they were given options. They had the option to go to the farmer's market, which is a private facility. We gave out keys. They had the option to go to City Hall because we were limiting the traffic in City Hall, and we knew that there was very little public participation there. The other option that they had was that if they were in their area and they lived in their area, that they could go home with the permission of their supervisor. And then the last option was if someone wanted to use the porta potties, it was available to them. That wasn't the only option, and they weren't forced to do that by any means. That's a premeditated, calculated statement by attorneys and by people who know that they're wrong when they say things like that. And let me tell you something about porta potties. These people go to concerts, they go to public events. What's there? You have road races. What's there?
Porta potties. I know what you're getting at. Yeah, we're talking
ridiculous.
We're talking to Mayor Mark Loretti this morning. So what would you say to the claim, Mark Loretti, the attorney, Michelle Holmes, saying that, you know, when you talk about the photos that were put on Facebook, the staged photos of the porta potties and people undressing, the reason being was that this was part of a rally and showing how these officers felt mistreated by the department. That's false, you're saying.
Well, look, they can say whatever they want to say. That's not what they were terminated for. I gave you the reasons why they were terminated. You know, when a police officer lies, you lose all credibility. You'll have people file more claims against you, and you get dragged into court to testify. Your character is going to be called into question. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ramifications that go along with lying. So, you know, they can say whatever they want to say. They can claim First Amendment right. Be my guest. Mm-hmm. But I got a victim who was sexually assaulted. I got cops who staged an event. And you know how we know they're staged? Because we have videos. We have videos of it. We have the before and afters. We have videos of these officers, same officers, coming and going and not undressing in the parking lot, coming to work dressed, going home dressed. And in fact, two of these officers, one of them lives four houses away from the police department, chose to stage a one-time event. The other officer lives a mile away from the police department. A one-time event to take her shirt off. Really?
The only thing I'm curious about, Mayor Mark Loretti, and I'm not discrediting anything you've said so far, I'm just curious then, why does it feel like former and even current officers they have no faith in the chief and they're attacking you? Why does it feel like it's you guys versus the department?
Because they're up against it and they have no choice but to do that. The only thing they can do is try to garner public opinion against us. You know, it's easy to say, well, I don't support him. I don't like what he's doing. It's easy to make up things. They did this to me before. 25 years ago, I went through this with some of the same individuals, in particular the one that wants to run against me for mayor. He forgets that he's got a track record. It's not very good. And we're going to talk about that. Not today, but we are going to talk about his disciplinary record, his behavior as a police officer, and now he wants to run the city because he doesn't get his way. You know, look it. There's a lot of moving parts here. And, you know, we're in court, and we're going to go to federal court, and we're going to go to the labor board, and all this evidence is going to be put on the record. So be careful what you wish for.
I'm curious, Mayor Loretti, are we dealing with a shortage of manpower at the department at this point?
We are not, and we never have been. We're at the same level of manpower we've been at for years. We've always met our minimum requirements under the contract. So, again, people try to portray things that aren't true. And, oh, so that means even if that were true, that means that we shouldn't uphold the standard. We shouldn't terminate bad cops just because we're worried about manpower requirements, which is not the case.
No, we absolutely shouldn't. That was actually going to be my second question, which is that so we have a good amount of officers at the department. Are they all being checked and trained properly to the standards that you think Shelton should be holding?
Well, look, we've never been a certified police department until this chief showed up. And he's holding people accountable.
What does that mean, a certified? What does that mean? Sorry.
That means we're State of Connecticut certified.
We weren't certified until this chief was here?
That's correct. And you know what? There's the vast majority of police departments around the State of Connecticut are not Connecticut State certified. Hmm. And so now the new federal law changes all that. So, when you hold people to a standard, when you require them to do things that they were able to get away with before, there's always going to be pushback. Unions never think that they have to comply. This isn't new. This goes on all the time. And as you know, Melissa, I've been at this game a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of experience here. I'm not going to just arbitrarily go after someone just because, it's convenient or I have nothing else to do in my life.
So when people say that this was a distraction, that's not the case, you're saying?
Well, what does that mean, a distraction? Distraction for what?
Well, I guess, to be honest, it's not the person you're thinking. I know you keep referring to David Eldridge. I'm just going to address the elephant in the room. I know you're addressing David Eldridge because he's the man who's running against you this year. I'm not talking about him. I've had multiple other people bring up your past, things that you were investigated with, and your connection to the chief, and saying that using these cases was a distraction from where you stand as mayor and where the chief now stands in the department.
Well, that's what they say. Where's their facts? And if they feel so aggrieved, file a complaint, file a lawsuit, do whatever you need to do. You know, I was investigated years ago. What happened? Tell me what happened.
No, I'm not trying. Yeah, it sounds like it was dismissed. It was dismissed.
No one in public life has been able to put up with the scrutiny that I've been under for 30 years. Okay, so all they can do is say it. That's it. Just say it. They can't prove it. They can't produce facts. So is this a character assassination? Because someone says it?
No.
And they want to say it anonymously or they want to hide behind Facebook?
No, I'm just I'm just doing my job asking questions. I'm not accusing you of anything, just so you know, Mayor Loretti.
And I've done my job in spades. We've changed this city. I'm doing things in this city that governors, that U.S. senators, that legislators can't and don't and never did. We have created an environment of prosperity in this city, and that's why we continue to grow. That's why businesses from the Bronx and businesses from all over Fairfield County move into my city. That's why people want to be here.
Well, Mayor,
there's a lot of resentment out there because no one's doing what I'm doing. And I'll tell you something, I am not a wallflower, and I'm not going to put up with it. They can expect pushback from me.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that you come on our show every other week, Mayor Loretti. We appreciate your honesty and taking the time, and I know I'll be connecting with you in just a couple of weeks. Thank you.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too. So the Children's Hospital Association is the national voice of more than 220 children's hospitals advancing child health through innovation in the quality, cost, and delivery of care. And did you know that we are in the midst of 2021 Speak Now for Kids Family Advocacy Week? To talk to us a little bit about this is Amy Knight, who's the president of Children's Hospital Association. Amy, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. Glad to be here.
First of all, what is this Advocacy Week? What is this about?
Sure. Every year, children from all over the country come to D.C. in various ways. Typically, it's in person. This year, it happens to be virtual, to really tell their stories to their legislators and to help them understand the barriers that they face in getting care, some of the challenges they have in their own lives, and what role pediatric health care has played in their lives to date. So it's an opportunity for children and families to really influence some of the decisions being made in Washington, D.C. that impact them back at home.
And it looks like the focus this year, Amy, is really on pediatric mental health. I have to imagine that's coming off the pandemic, correct?
It absolutely is coming off the pandemic, but we would be remiss to think that it was only caused by the pandemic. So pediatric mental health has been really growing to crisis mode for about the past decade. So we've seen a doubling in children's hospitals of emergency room visits, particularly for younger kids, and suicide ideation. When you look at the pandemic, it's really just exacerbated that and shone a light on some of the weaknesses in our behavioral health care system for kids. And so many of the children actually talking to their legislators this week have experienced their own mental health crisis, some as young as 4, representing Connecticut. So we're delighted to have them here and being brave enough to tell their stories really brings an important voice to children across this country.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. We're talking to Amy Knight this morning, the president of Children's Hospital Association, and that four-year-old Samuel was a patient at Connecticut Children's in Hartford and speaking to Congress. I mean, what an incredible, first of all, bravery, but an opportunity to be able to talk to our federal lawmakers here in this country. I think that's unbelievable. Now, I'm seeing here, Amy, this really, to me, this is a very scary thing to read. Connecticut Children's Emergency Department screens all patients ages 10 and up for risk of suicide. This last year, did we see a bump in that percentage?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that children's hospitals across the country are doing. And really, it's really scary to say, but one in four children over 10 that presented in Connecticut Children's emergency room screened positive for suicide ideation, which means they have at least thought about committing suicide in their lifetime. So that is an increase. It's about a doubling over the prior year. So it is something we should all be alarmed about. And I think if you look at Connecticut Children's and Yale New Haven Children's Hospital in the state of Connecticut, they both are working very hard within their state and within their communities to change that narrative for kids.
So, Amy, you know, we're virtually doing it, but, you know, we're presenting all of this data. What does this mean? What are you looking to see happen to better the lifestyle for our kids and to bring those percentages back down?
Sure. We actually need to start to rebuild our pediatric healthcare system to make sure children can grow up as healthy as possible. And that especially includes our mental health care system. So we do a great job of taking care of children with asthma or diabetes. And we've seen, you know, the coordination of that care and their outcomes improve a lot over the past 40 or 50 years. We're not there yet with mental health care. So at the federal level, we're talking very seriously to Congress about a bill called Strengthening Kids' Mental Health Now. What that does is start to build some capacity to take care of kids, whether that's workforce, new facilities, new programs. It's improving kids' access. So it's very easy, quite honestly, to get a doctor's appointment when your child is experiencing maybe stomach ache or having trouble breathing or some symptoms that would reflect a physical illness. And the insurance companies and insurance providers are going to pay for that. It's much more challenging in mental health. So there's not enough providers. There's not enough reimbursement. And we frankly lack the infrastructure that we need. So we're working on that at the federal level. Just this week also in Connecticut, Connecticut Children's and Yale New Haven have released really a request at the state level for a plan to be put in place by August 1 of this year. They're seeing continued rise in their visits. And typically as summer would come in a normal school year, you would see some of those start to subside. The pressure gets off kids, but they're only seeing an increase at this level. So we're in a very unique time. Many kids will be going back to school physically for the first time in the fall, and we can expect this crisis to continue at the current levels, if not grow, as we move into the fall and winter of this next year.
We're talking to Amy Knight this morning, the president of Children's Hospital Association. It's tricky, Amy, because I know as a reporter for the last 10 years, I've talked significantly about the stigma around mental health, normalizing it, make it more normal, talk about it more, and you'll see how many people actually do struggle with some sort of mental health. But, you know, it's interesting, like when you say that you either have a stomach ache or you have something you could diagnose, you could see it. You can't see mental health. And I'm curious, you know, we also live in a time right now where we're asking people to open up, share where they're coming from. No judgment here. But I'm sorry, there's still judgment out there where people will debate, should I hire this person for their mental health? Should I be friends with this person for their mental health? There are even people who are criticized, kids, I'll even say, oh, they're so dramatic. That mental health doesn't even exist. Like, they're just using it as an excuse. What would you say to claims like that? Because it's very counterproductive, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of evidence that goes to point to the fact that if we're able to intervene early, and so as you noted, those signs, which may not be physically obvious, it may just be a change in behavior, it may be acting out more. You know, when I was a child, the kids that acted out, you reflect back and you wonder what was really going on in their life. They were just seen as behavioral problems, but they may have had something more significant. So as parents and teachers and neighbors and friends, we all need to be listening to kids. You know, I think your point on on hiring and choosing friends, there still is a lot of stigma around that. Mm-hmm. But when we know that more than 50% of mental health issues begin by age 14, it just really shines a light on the fact that if we intervene with these kids early, they may not be an adult with a mental health condition. We may be able to treat it early and address it and or teach them skills to manage their own mental and behavioral health as they grow older, making them healthier and more productive adults. So it is such a fine line, as you note. And in many ways, we can also take cues from our kids. They're very open about this. And it's often adults that shut them down. So we need to be very cognizant of our own actions and interactions and make sure we validate their feelings and are hearing what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. President of Children's Hospital Association, Amy Knight, thank you for coming on this morning. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Melissa, and thank you for really highlighting this very important issue in children's health.
Not a problem at all. Thank you.
On behalf of the UPS store, welcome to our Small Biz Challenge.
Okay, so I have to be honest with all of you. I confess I had never even heard of the UPS Small Biz Challenge. I did not until about a week ago when I learned that a local business owner here in Connecticut is actually a semi-finalist for this challenge. His name is Jonathan. Yes, that's right. Jonathan Marcus is here this morning to talk a little bit about his business and the challenge. Jonathan, congratulations and welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Melissa. Thank you for having me. It's very, very nice of you.
No, it's really nice of you to take the time. First of all, what is the UPS Small Biz Challenge? I've never heard of it. I'm so sorry.
Well, don't be. It's only been around, I think, for a few years, and it's sponsored by the UPS Store and Inc. magazine, and it highlights a number of small businesses, and this year was a particular focus about how small businesses like us pivoted during some pretty challenging times in the last year.
Okay, so this is a nationwide challenge?
It's a nationwide challenge. My understanding is that 2,000 businesses applied for the competition, and they selected 10 semifinalists, and we're honored and humbled to be one of them.
So let's talk about this, Jonathan Marcus. You're the owner of Rose Sisters Chips. If people have not heard of it, what is that?
Well, let me just say, my mom, in fact, owns Rose Sisters Chips.
Oh.
My official title is a co-founder and the favorite son of Anne.
I like it. I like it. That's awesome. So what is Rose Sisters Chips? I don't know if everyone is familiar with your locations.
Well, we manufacture seasoned, baked, gourmet, and life-changing tortilla chips. And our original recipe was created by my grandmother back in Poland 110 years ago.
Wow.
And my mom and my aunt perfected the recipe. And we, you know, all of our lives, we heard people tell us we have to sell it. Which, you know, was very nice, but we rejected that because everybody's nice when it's free. And eventually we listened. And 2.5 years ago, we brought it to the marketplace. We originally outsourced production down in New Jersey, quickly outgrew their capabilities, and we've set up our own manufacturing facility here in Bridgeport. So, you know, we have our own staff, local resources, and yeah, we've been growing ever since.
Okay, so Jonathan Marcus, I can't help but notice you said life-changing recipe. What do you mean life-changing?
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean by that?
You got to taste it and you'll completely understand. It's one bite and it's just a whole out-of-body experience.
Like you're never going to go back to the brand name chips again. You're never going to want it.
Not a chance.
I like it. I got to be honest, I am a very big chips and salsa kind of girl. I like a good guacamole here and there as well. So this sounds like it's right up my alley. So I'm not opposed to this.
All I can tell you is have a taste and hold on tight.
Okay. I love that. Now we're talking this morning to Jonathan Marcus, who is with Rose Sisters Chips, maker of gourmet seasoned baked tortilla chips. Life-changing, I'm told. This is a 4-generation family recipe, which is just incredible. So Jonathan, tell us, my understanding from this challenge is you could walk away with $25,000. That's amazing.
Well, that would be a beautiful thing for sure. Yes. So we are a semifinalist and they are narrowing the field to the top 5 which is based solely on public votes. And the way to vote is if you go to inc.com, that's INC.com, and search for the UPS store, the competition will come up. And the 10 finalists are there. And you just click on the video, watch a little blurb about us, and vote away.
Okay, so just so you know, Jonathan, because I know a lot of my listeners are going to want me to say the website 100 times, I am going to copy it, everybody. I'm going to copy the website, and on the podcast, when I put Jonathan's segment there, I will put the website right there. That way you can go right there. You'll go directly to the source. You can vote for Jonathan. Go out and vote for him because, I mean, representing Connecticut, an amazing product, and this is a beautiful thing coming off the pandemic and what so many people have struggled through. This would be such an honor and such a beautiful win for you and everybody at Rose Sisters Chips. But just so that if people are quick and they could get the website right now, do you have it with you right now, Jonathan, that website for people to vote?
Well, the full website is really, really long and a bit convoluted, so it's easier to see it. But like I said, if you go to www.inc.com and just search for the UPS store, the competition pops right up.
Okay. So again, we're going to find out. They're going to allow for votes through Monday, June 5th. So you guys, you got a couple of weeks to do that. And then the five finalists will be announced on Friday, July 9th. And our fingers are crossed. We are, of course, rooting for you, Jonathan Marcus. Thank you so much for coming on this morning. And good luck to you, my friend.
You are too cool for words, Melissa, I got to tell you.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. I hope you'll come back on the show when you're a finalist, because I know you're going to make it.
That's great. I would love to. I truly, truly appreciate you.
Okay, perfect. I can't wait to have you back on the show. Jonathan Marcus, thank you so much.
Thank you. Enjoy the day.
Thanks, you too.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Lissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Dan. Welcome back to the show. Did businesses and residents, was it last night that they met with city council about where the funding from the American Rescue Plan should go in Bridgeport? Was that last night?
That's correct. Yeah, city council held a public hearing for both residents and businesses to you know, just provide their ideas and suggestions on how they can use this American Rescue Plan dollars. As I mentioned last week, that a city has, you know, three basic categories of where, you know, these dollars go that they want to go to, or at least a good portion of them. But they also want to take a look at opportunities where they can, you know, invest in certain projects that will spark economic development and other activities. You know, they're looking at things like broadband. You know, during the pandemic, obviously there was a big gap with access to technology for kids. With schools, so stuff like that, infrastructure needs related to the water treatment plant. But they want to look at some bigger picture things too, and that's where our office, the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, is trying to help. So they submitted a survey, or they opened up a survey last week. The public hearing, as I mentioned, was last night. However, there's still time for people to submit their ideas and suggestions, and they can do that either by the survey, which is online on the BridgeportCT.gov site, or they can certainly message us at the BRBC or call our office. We're happy to entertain any ideas. There's no crazy idea. I think what we want to do is just try to capture as much as we can and then, you know, filter through and help the city identify opportunities where we think there's an opportunity for growth.
So you're saying, Dan, people still have time to submit feedback, even though last night's meeting happened. You guys are still taking comments. How long will you be taking feedback?
At least for the next week to 10 days or so, probably into next week. We're trying to set up some time with the chairs of the budget committee over the next couple of weeks. So we're going to try to just, you know, listen as much as we can. You know, we obviously have our board has our own ideas and suggestions that we're trying to vet out from a business perspective and an economic development perspective. Me personally, I'd love to see some kind of investment with downtown. Without our urban center thriving, you know, it's really hard to get the other pockets of the city kind of, you know, really moving forward. So I'm a big advocate for downtown renewal, and I think a lot of our board members feel that way as well.
And I'm sure Dan Onofrio with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, I can only imagine if your head is spinning this morning, it would be if it were me. Could you tell us, maybe give us an idea of what are some of the common things that were brought to the floor from specifically businesses in Bridgeport? What would people like to see be done with this money?
Yeah, so I unfortunately wasn't at the public hearing last night, so I don't know all the details that surfaced from the meeting. However, we did hear from quite a few of our members, and there is a theme for sure on how we can leverage our city and put our city in a better position, especially with the amphitheater opening up. I think I mentioned this a few times, where we're going to have thousands of people coming into the city for shows, and the Islanders are going to be reopening in September. So how can we get these people that are not familiar with Bridgeport into our downtown and frequent other patrons and restaurants and other areas of the city? Because it's kind of like a one-shot opportunity, right? If they come and they explore the city and they don't have a great experience, the chances of them going to another show and then venturing into the city either before or after, reduces dramatically if they're not having a good experience. So we want to try to figure out how we can, not just from a cleanliness and a safety perspective, but from an entertainment perspective and a service perspective, to give people a sense that, hey, Bridgeport's a really cool city. Let's go for the show, but let's spend the weekend. Those kind of things. So we hear that recurring in a lot of the messages.
Yeah, making sure that we really capitalize when you have, especially out-of-staters coming in, how do you then keep them there and also benefit other surrounding businesses? It makes a lot of sense. Dan Onofrio with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council is here. And a couple other things, Dan, before I let you go. My understanding is there were some new ribbon cuttings last weekend. What was going on?
Yeah, so this is the best part of my job, Alyssa. especially during the pandemic when we were still doing ribbon cuttings, it was incredible. But you're seeing new business owners, taking the risk. It's not easy to open up a business. So we saw two downtown businesses open up last weekend. It was organized by our special services district, our downtown special services district, City of Bridgeport, our office. But we saw the Tiny Cellar, which is basically a wine and liquor store, open up on Fairfield Avenue right near the Bijou Theater over there. We're pretty excited about that. And then we had Berlinetta, which is a brewery. Two brothers opened up Berlinetta right off of Golden Hill. It's in that renovation that's happening at that building. I forgot the name of the building there, but it's right off Main Street. And they opened up on Saturday. Really, really cool experience going in there. They're brewing their own beer there with an Eastern European twist on it. And they have some food trucks. We're outside. And just the atmosphere inside is pretty cool. If you like vintage records, they've got a selection of vintage records that they're selling. Really cool vibe. So I'd encourage anyone, if you're downtown, check out both of those places. Really great business owners on both sides, the Tiny Cellar and Berlinetta Brewing. Off of Golden Hill Road and Main Street.
Very, very cool. Now, Dan, I know it still hasn't passed just yet, but we are sort of anticipating in some way, shape, or form very soon that the cannabis bill will become legal here in Connecticut and that people are going to be able to commercially buy pot, essentially, very, very soon. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you have heard any rumblings of possible storefronts in Bridgeport, anybody who has given interest or shown interest in opening something up once this becomes legal?
I personally have not heard of anyone interested in, opening up one of these facilities. I just hope that they, it's one of those things. I think we talked a little bit about this a while back. We make it so difficult to get stuff done in Connecticut. And I know last night there was a kind of a last minute
amendment added. Yep.
Yeah. That's causing a little bit of a ruckus. So it'll be an interesting day today. It'd be great to see them get it over the finish line, only from the mere perspective that, our surrounding states are selling it. And if we think for a second that, people are not going to, are not going to get their hands on it in one way or another, let's just get it done. And let's just figure it out, I know it sounds a lot easier than it is, but it sounds like the governor in its current form might veto this thing and then be a shame for us to not see it go through. So But yeah, to answer your question, I think, you know, I'm sure it'll pop up, but I personally have not heard of anyone saying, yeah, you know, I want to open one of these at this location, at least not yet anyway. I think people are still trying to figure it out. I'm hearing more from the business owners, like, okay, how does this impact my employees and coming to work safely?
Right, because you don't really need to drug test or anything like that really anymore once this becomes legal, because that's what essentially businesses were drug testing for, was pot.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot more about that. So we'll probably have some sessions, some informational sessions with our, you know, some attorneys within our network, just to kind of talk through that stuff, especially for our smaller employers that may not have a full blown HR department that can help them navigate this stuff. So kind of a bit of a moving target, Melissa, but you know, it is an interesting time, and I hope today they can just get it done and we can move on and do the amendments and all the other things after the fact.
Well, especially if it does pass this week, Dan, I would love to dive into that maybe next week, because I'm sure a lot of business owners do have that kind of lingering question, even if they're not with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. I'm sure many business owners are saying, okay, so what next? How do I regulate this in the workplace? So I'd love to dive into that next week when you're on the show, especially if it passes this week. So I appreciate your time.
I look forward to it, Melissa, always. Okay,
thanks,
have a
Dan.
Great day, okay?
Thanks, you too.